the second quarter. There's John Chick. And he takes down Darian Durant. So he's got some bragging rights. Here's Durant under duress again. Gets away from Adrian Tracy. Throws over the middle. It's intercepted again. Courtney Stevens got it this time. It's the fourth pick of the night. So second and long. Valeros dancing, throwing wide open. Terrence Tolliver. Touchdown. It's first down. Cats inside the 15. Into the end zone. Chad Owens. Touchdown. Fifth touchdown pass of the night for Kolaros. That's a new career best.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, remember last week when we set your punishment for the lying to the listeners and you got to bring the Chris Jones sign to the Eskimos game this week?
Yep.
Okay, it has been requested of me from Andrew at the Eskimo Empire podcast that you attend an event known as Westivus. Do you know what this is?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you have to go there and you have to bring your sign with you. I don't know if you've, have you decided which slogan you're going to go with yet?
I have more class than Chris Jones.
Nice, nice, nice. You have to bring that sign with you to Westivus, and there's going to be a group photo taken with you and the sign and everyone else who's there. And that is going to be the photo that you have to post on social media to prove that you made the sign and went to the game. Sound fun? Sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay.
It'd be kind of funny. I was thinking if I, you know, dressed all dirty and like, you know, to amp up the I have more class than Chris Jones, you know, like dirt on my face and like ripped jeans and but I don't think I'll do that.
No? No? Come on.
Maybe.
Come on.
Like little cut-up jeans, like super cut-up shorts, like really short.
Oh, like ones where it looks like your nuts are hanging out?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, maybe don't go that far. I don't want you to get arrested.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens on game day.
Hey, the sign is good enough for me. The picture's good enough for me. If you want to go even further, I applaud it. I support it. But that's up to you.
I won't have any liquid courage because I got to work the next day at 7, so we'll see.
Okay, well, I guess we're going to find out that night when you post that picture up there. I look forward to seeing it. I think this is a fun punishment. I appreciate Joe last week for coming up with it. I like it. If this ever happens again, I think something similar to this will have to occur. But I really like this one. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it was a great idea.
Speaking of fun, our fantasy team in the CFL Podcast Family League rolled once again. Our Week 9 result was a big win over the 2-0 podcast. They beat us back in Week 2. We got our revenge this week. Absolutely put a whooping down on them. Beat them 202 to 125. We are now back on top, tied for first in the league with the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, which is run by my 3 Down Nation colleague, John Hodge, and the previously mentioned Eskimo Empire podcast. We are all tied for first place with a 6-3 record. Things are getting tight there. Our next game is against the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. That is the show that is co-hosted by a friend of our show, Joe Pritchard. We beat them handily back in Week 3, 243 to 160. I like Joe. I really do. Met him at a game last year. Wonderful dude. Great CFL fan. Guy who's promoting the game down south. Unfortunately, his team this year is garbage. They are basically the riders of this fantasy league. They're 1-8.
Ooh.
Yeah, woof, right?
Yeah,
losing to them, we're the first place team. If we lost to them, that would be completely unacceptable. So we got to lay a beat down on these guys. If we lose, I'm going to be extremely disappointed.
Yeah, we got to beat these guys down. You know, damn Yanks. But yeah, the 1-8, I mean, that's wow. That's bad.
Yeah, and if you look at their team, I don't have the roster in front of me, but it's not a bad squad. They've just come up against teams that are better. And this happens every year in fantasy. You can have a really good squad. Most teams in CFL fantasy have a decent squad, but like we have, for instance, we have Montreal's quarterbacks. Kevin Glenn went out last week and threw for 380 yards and 5 touchdowns. You have that guy and you're not playing the other guy who threw for 380 yards and 5 touchdowns, chances are you're going to win.
Yeah, it was an interesting week in CFL football. All the games were blowouts and some big games for some quarterbacks, even Bo Levi Mitchell, who didn't have quite the numbers of Glenn and Kolaros, had huge numbers as well. So it was a very interesting week in the CFL.
So speaking of blowouts, let's go right into this Ticats game. I'm honestly not sure how to put this into words which is kind of a bad thing considering this is a podcast and we need to be able to communicate with our words in order for the audience to understand what we're talking about. But holy smokes, man, the Ticats absolutely hammered the Riders on Saturday night. The final score was 53-7. I'm going to say that again in case you thought I stuttered. 53-7. I am kind of hard-pressed to recall watching a game from the Ticats where they won this handily. Like, such a one-sided outcome in their favor. Is there any game that you can think of off the top of your head that was this much of a blowout in Hamilton's favor?
Well, recent memory, maybe, I think it was last year that they really put a beat down on the Bombers and they might have put up 50. I could be wrong, but I have that memory of...
No, them. You're right. You're right. They did go into Winnipeg and put up 50, but they didn't hold Winnipeg to under 10.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This was just an absolute ass kicking. Like, I knew the Ticats would win this game. I think we were very adamant about that on last week's show. And I thought they would win fairly handily. I thought this would be a three or four score win, but for them to win 53-7, I did not see that coming. I absolutely did not see that coming. It was just, they dominated from start to finish, just absolutely obliterated the Riders.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, a little shaky at first. Claros made some mistakes early on, but, you know, after he got those mistakes out of the way, it was just pretty much perfect football from Claros and the Ticats, and it was a joy to watch. Just to see the team play like they did last year was very exciting, you know, to think about the future, about how this team can put together wins like that. Maybe, you know, not like that, not 53-7 each week, but how they looked, how they can look in the future with Claros behind center. It's very exciting.
It very much reminded me, this performance, of last summer, where they were just going out there, and I believe it was three consecutive weeks. It was four consecutive weeks. They beat down the Argos at home. They beat down the Bombers at home. They beat down Lions at home. And then they went into Edmonton and nearly put 50 up on the best defense in the CFL last year. Like, watching this just felt like this was the team that we would have seen at the tail end of last year if number four's knee would have held up. Like, it just felt like last summer, and they got a tough game this week. And I don't want to get into too much of this upcoming game against Calgary before we get through this game against the Riders, but aside from this game, you look at their schedule, and I'm not saying they will win them all, but you got to look at it and go, they can win every single game left on their schedule after this game against Calgary.
I hope you're right about that. I mean, after Calgary, you got Toronto back-to-back. With Ray being back, it's going to be tougher than Kilgore was in there, obviously. But both winnable games, and back into the season, you're right. They got another game against Saskatchewan, you got Montreal. I'm not going to go through all of them here, but yeah, they're all winnable games with Claros back, and, you know, with this defense looking better, I think they have a bright second half of the season coming up.
So let's get into your offensive review of this game, Mike. What did you see from the offense that got you excited? What were some of the standout moments for you in this one?
There was a bunch of standout moments. I mean, just Claros obviously had a monster game, 5 touchdowns, almost 400 yards passing. One of the highlights for me was the Banks touchdown. The long bomb to Banks was a beautiful thing. I thought that, you know, the offense overall played outstanding. They were just seemed to be unstoppable after those first couple of drives where Claros looked a little bit shaky, threw one pick in the end zone and almost had another pick. And then, yeah, that crazy play to Fantuz, the tip drill. But yeah, overall, the offense looked great. I thought the offensive line really held up well. They had a lot better game than they did last week. CJ Gable was involved. He only had 8 carries, but he caught 4 catches, and you know, it's always great to see him involved with the game. Terrence Tolliver had a huge game. I think this guy could have a monster second half of the season. You know, he had 5 catches for 139 yards. Claros and him seem to have a really good connection going on. So just overall, you know, the best performance I've seen out of the Ticats offensive wise for quite a while. Since last year, since Claros was in there. So, you know, just an awesome performance by the Ticats on offense.
Well, the thing that strikes me most about this offense is their big play capability now that Claros is back there. If you look at all the guys that caught passes for this team, whoever had more than one catch, Spencer Watt only had 1 catch, so I disqualify him. Every other player who had at least 2 catches, the only one whose longest catch was under 22 yards was Luke Tasker. Chad Owens had a catch for 24. Banks had the 58-yard bomb for a touchdown. Even Gables, one of Gables' catches went for 22. And if he doesn't kind of stumble and jump in the air, he probably scores on that play as well. Fantuzzo's longest was 37, and Tolliver was 47. This team, with Caleros back there, and we kind of saw it against BC, they're more willing to attack teams deep. And I think that that's the one thing, the one part of Caleros' game that we do talk about, but I don't know if we talk about enough, is his accuracy and his efficiency when it comes to the deep ball. He is awesome at it, and it is so much fun to watch and see them pick up these big chunk plays. And you talked about Terrence Tolliver. I want to talk about him for a second, because I don't know if this guy has NFL aspirations. I'm sure he does. I think there's a legitimate chance that when his contract is up, he does get a shot down south, because there's some things that he does in this football field. Do you remember the play? I think it was just before halftime, and set up the Chad Owens, the first of two Chad Owens touchdowns, where he caught the pass, it was a little underthrown. He goes up and catches it, and I think it was Tavon Campbell drapes himself over him, and Tolliver drags him for like 10 yards, five of which basically Campbell was on his back with his feet off the ground. It was freaking incredible.
It was a great catch, too. He had to stop and come back to the ball. He kind of basketed it, and it was a beautiful catch and run. And, you know, I'm surprised he didn't take him all the way to the end zone, but it was a hell of a 10-yard drag there by Tolliver.
Yeah, it's incredible to see how this team plays differently. And this is no knock on Jeremiah Mazzoli. He came in, he did what he had to do, and we appreciate, I know I do, and I'm sure you do as well, what he did for this team throughout the first 6 weeks of the season. But there's just something different about this offense with Caleros back there. There is... I don't know if they just trust him more, if there's just, I don't know what it is, but man, do they just look like a well-oiled machine? And it really looks like you're right, there were some hiccups early with the near interception and a couple of bad throws, but it seems like each week, so he's played two games now. I'd say the first half against BC was tough, and then the second half things picked up. This one, it seemed like maybe the first quarter was tough, and then things picked up. It really looks like him getting back into game shape is coming really quickly.
Yeah, and if they don't take him out of that game, I mean, he could have had close to 500 yards passing and like 7 touchdowns. So this guy is one of the best, if not the best, and I think he's just going to get better in the upcoming games, and by the end of the season, we're going to be on fire.
He's played two games so far this year, and he has 7 touchdown passes. Henry Burris has played, I believe it was 3.5 or something, only had 6. The league leaders have 14 and have each played 8 games. He's played 2 and he's a halfway to the league lead. Like, this guy's incredible.
Hopefully, you know, he's not going to have the yardage of some of the guys, but maybe he can put up the touchdowns of some of the top quarterback performers in the league this year. But yeah, overall, I think the quarterbacks are getting more yardage and more touchdowns this year, and it's great to watch.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. This guy could have lit it up. I believe he came out with like 8 or so minutes left in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And they didn't throw the ball a ton in the fourth quarter, though Mazzoli did have a touchdown pass late in the game to Luke Tasker. But just the way they spread the ball around, too. 7 different guys caught passes.
5 different guys caught touchdowns.
Exactly. 5 different that's the only guy who had multiple touchdowns was Chad Owens. And the way this team, with all these weapons, this, now that they have their quarterback back, this team's going to be tough to stop.
Yeah, for sure. It's like you said, Mazzoli did a good job. He, you know, led the team to a 500 record, and then Caleros comes in and just takes them to a new level. So yeah, we got a tough game coming up. You know, tough next 3 games. The Argos are no slouches, so it's going to be interesting to see how he performs against tougher teams. You know, the Rough Riders are obviously not a great team this year, but they're still professional football players, and he still put huge numbers up against them, so I'm not going to take that away from them.
Hey, you can only beat who's in front of you, and we've seen Saskatchewan play some teams tough. They beat Ottawa. Trevor Harris got hurt in that game, and if Trevor Harris stays healthy, Saskatchewan probably doesn't win that football game, but they still beat Ottawa. They played it close with Calgary a week ago. They lose in overtime, I think, or nearly overtime to Edmonton. Like, they've been in games. Like, they haven't they've looked bad, and they've looked good, and no team has done this to Saskatchewan yet. Beat them down this badly. And I don't care if the Riders are 1-7 and all that stuff. You can only beat the team that's in front of you. And they beat them in a way that they established dominance in this game, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. And that's where I want to turn to next, because it wasn't just the offense that rolled in this one. The defense did that as well. Hey, they didn't allow 30-plus points in the first half, so that's got to be a cause for celebration, right?
Can't be doing that, and they didn't allow 10 points in the whole game, so the defense played awesome. You're going to get into it more, but just a big shout-out to John Chick for having a big game as well.
Oh, I'm going to get into some John Chick stuff a little bit later because he's making me look kind of foolish for some stuff I said about him when he was signed. But before we get there, the defense bent a little bit in this game. They play that bend but don't break type of defense, but they never broke. They didn't allow Saskatchewan into the end zone. The Riders' 7 points came on 2 field goals and a punt single. So if you're going to hold teams out of the end zone, you're going to win a lot of football games. They forced as many turnovers, 7, as points allowed. They had 4 interceptions off Darian Durant, who entered the game with 0. They later got one off Mitchell Gale. They had a turnover on downs late in the game. Big Teddy had a fumble recovery. This, again, reminded me of the Hamilton Tiger Cats defense that we saw last summer, creating turnovers. They didn't score any touchdowns. That's the one thing that they haven't done this year that they did a lot of last year. Although Emmanuel Davis could have had a pick six on a pass that he knocked down, but if he could have held on to it, he was going to the end zone. But forcing 7 turnovers, this is the Ticats defense under Orlando Steinhauer that we were becoming accustomed to last year. I don't know if this is back for good, but 7 turnovers in a game, never going to be upset about that.
And it's so good to see Emmanuel Davis getting back to his game that he had last year. I mean, this guy was on fire last year, and you know, pick in each game, last 2 games. It's good to see him catch fire a bit in the secondary and help out this team. And I thought that the new guys on the corners played pretty well, Chris Davis and Brandon Sermons. You know, you didn't hear much about them because you know, they weren't giving up much. So it's good to see those replacements do pretty well.
There was a couple of plays I noticed from Sermons that were concerning. He gave up a couple of deep balls. Again, in a game like this, I'm not going to harp too much on the negatives because you win by 46 points. You kind of sound like an a-hole if you're like, well, they didn't do this way. The secondary, to me, is still a little bit of a concern. But again, first game jitters for these guys. Like, it's not Brandon Sermons' first game in the league, but it's his first game starting for the Ticats. So you got to kind of give him some leeway. You get that sort of initiation to the team and how they play in a game like this. I think it's okay, but I'm still a little concerned there. Emmanuel Davis, though, you're absolutely right. Looks like he might be rounding back into that 2015 form that we saw. 2 picks in his last 2 games. I think this may have been his best game of the year. So I really like seeing that. And as the other guys come along, I think the secondary is going to get a little bit better and a little bit better. But I want to see this again. We keep going looking ahead to Calgary. I'm really curious to see how the secondary holds up against a really good Calgary receiving core. And on top of that, a lot of the success of the secondary in this game came because of a relentless pass rush that was just in Durant's face all night. Calgary's got a really good offensive line that has kept Bo Levi Mitchell upright most of the season, so it's going to be a nice test for them. But again, we're getting too ahead of ourselves here. The what I've dubbed the Four Horsemen of the Sackpocalypse, I'm going to keep pounding that nickname until someone other than myself says it, because these guys, Nevis, Laurent, Chick, Tracy, great game. They recorded 4 sacks in total, 2 by Chick. Nevis had 1. Big Teddy had 1. He also had the fumble recovery that I talked about earlier. Tracy didn't have any sacks, but he had the interception. Man, these guys are just like, when they are on their game, it seems like everyone gets a piece of the pie.
Yeah, they've been really turning it up the last couple of weeks, and it's great to see because we all know that the defensive line can get pressure. It helps out the rest of the defense. So, yeah, it's great to see Chick get 2 sacks against his old team that he has some, you know, he's not very high on. You know, he's not very happy about the way he was released, and he wanted to prove something, and I think he did in this game that he still has a lot left in the tank. So, awesome to see Chick get those 2 sacks. And, you know, I've been noticing all year that Courtney Steven on those safety blitzes, have you noticed he's just flying in there? It's been, you know, he's timing up perfectly and he's just getting at the quarterback each time. It seems every time they call that safety blitz, it's fun to watch him fly in there and get at the quarterback.
Yeah, there was that big one this time that almost led to a sack where he literally goes flying. He looked to be a good 2, 3, 4 feet in the air as he jumped, and he lands at Durant's feet, didn't get the sack. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. When they do the safety blitz, it looks like it's at the, like, almost at the perfect time almost. I don't know if Stevens got there. I don't think he has a sack this year. But again, just getting pressure from anywhere on a quarterback is going to lead to some good things. So yeah, I've absolutely seen that. And John Chick, man, I remember when he was signed back in January. I had some questions about this guy. He had fallen off the tail end of last year, and I legitimately wondered if maybe his best days were behind him. He is tied for the league in sacks. He has a motor that just doesn't stop. He's been a man possessed, was absolutely on fire in this game. Obviously got up for it. His words before the game about how his release was handled. He had a point to prove, and he made Darian Durant's life a living hell, and he makes me look like a complete idiot every single time he goes out there and plays. Again, much like Chad Owens when I was questioning that signing as well, these two guys have come in, have played absolutely fantastic. And if I'm going to be wrong about something, I'd rather be wrong about a guy I didn't think was going to perform and does than be wrong about it the opposite way. So if Chick wants to make me look like an idiot for the rest of the season, I'm more than happy to be looking like an idiot.
Well, yeah, and he's making Chris Jones look like an idiot too, because, I mean, John Chick on the defensive line of the Riders would sure help them out right now. So, yeah, it's both those guys have had awesome seasons so far. They've been big contributors to the team, and both, as of this point, are great signings for the Ticats.
Yeah, not much special teams-wise in this game. Brandon Banks did not have a big return. He had the big 58-yard touchdown catch, though. Mostly Brett Maher extends his field goal streak to 16 straight made field goals. Just this guy every week. His one bad game of the year was at home against BC, and it was pretty windy at Tim Hortons Field this week. So I wanted to see how he performed. Goes perfect again. Each week we talk about how much we're excited that this guy's on this team, and I feel like we're beating a dead horse, or we sound like a broken record, or whatever you know saying you want to use. But man, he's just become automatic. It's. I know he's going to miss a field goal eventually, but I'm going to ride this wave. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. When they signed this guy, I had my questions. You know, he had some bad stats coming into the season when he was with Ottawa. You know, he was really bad from beyond 45 yards. And I don't know what he's done. I don't know who he's training with, but this guy has just been amazing, except for that one game. So he's hitting the long field goals. He's punting well. I just can't say enough about him. Huge Maher fan.
Well, Derek Taylor of TSN, he releases his Troy Westwood Memorial kicking rankings each week. And after this past week, Brett Maher is number one in the kicking rankings. And there's been a lot of good kickers this year. Like, field goal percentages have gone up, but he's also been really good on extra points, which is at one point, I think this week, Derek had Rene Paredes first, but then was like, he's missed seven converts. Maher hasn't. So, yeah, number one on those rankings. And with guys like Justin Medlock and Rene Paredes and Chris Milo, who had a great year last year, for Maher to be up there as the number one kicker on Derek Taylor's rankings, that's pretty darn good at the halfway point of the season.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good. I mean, the only bad kicking performances that I can think of is Boris Beattie in Montreal. I mean, there's been a lot of good kicking this year. Howard Lahu's come back from his disappointing season last year and really played well for the Argos. And, it's good to see good field goal kickers in the league, because it always sucks seeing those, chip shots being missed, and it's just bad to watch. So to have good field goal kickers in the league is a good thing.
Yeah, there was another thing I want to talk about in this game that kind of put a smile on my face, and that was seeing Mercer Timmis get his first action at running back. This was his first game of the season after being activated off the 6-game injured list. Because of the blowout, he got a chance to get in the game and get some carries. He only had 3 carries for 6 yards, and he came oh so close to scoring his first career touchdown. I would have loved for him in his first game. You know, he was a Burlington boy. I think it was his great-great-grandfather was Brian Timmis, who the old soccer stadium that was attached to Tim Hortons or to Iverwind Stadium was named after. Would have been really cool to see him get a touchdown in his first game, but I'm just happy that this kid got a chance to get some reps at running back. And I don't know if he's going to be on this team or where he's going to fit in. Obviously, he plays a lot of special teams, but it's just nice to see these local guys get a shot, and that put a smile on my face late in the game.
Yeah, I thought they were going to hand off to him again. They gave him the one handoff near the end zone, and he almost got in but couldn't make it there. And then I thought they were going to do it again, but Mazzoli pulled the ball and gave it to Tasker, I believe. So, yeah, I would like to see him get a touchdown, but it's just good to see him in the game. And I'm sure it was a big deal for him to be running the ball on that field in front of those fans.
For sure. There is one thing I want to get your opinion on. It's something that bothered me about this game, and it was the 3 challenges for illegal contact that we saw. One was a Hail Mary challenge by Chris Jones late in the game that failed. But we saw 2 be successful, one against Hamilton and one in Hamilton's favor. And the only one I can really speak on, maybe you can give better insight because you watched the game on television, but the one on Brandon Banks on what would have been Zach Collaros' interception, It was away from the play. I don't even think Collaros was looking Banks' way. I really hate these challenges and these overturned plays on things that happen on the complete opposite side of the field. I know this went in our favor, led to a field goal, took an interception off the board, but I'm a fan of this league, and I think these things are just getting out of hand. I absolutely hated this, and I don't know where do you stand on this? I think illegal contact needs to be in the offseason. They need to overhaul what can be challenged, and I think they got to get rid of illegal contact because every play could have illegal contact on it, and that had no bearing on the outcome of the play. The interception was thrown on the complete other side of the field.
Yeah, and the illegal contact was kind of ticky-tacky. Yes, he grabbed Banks' jersey, but it wasn't like a big tug or anything. I didn't think it was – I thought it was a bad call. Yeah, I don't like this. Coaches challenging illegal contact, just like, oh, maybe there was legal contact on this guy. It slows down the game, and it's not helping out with the flow of the game. And, yeah, I don't like it. I think they should take a look at it in the offseason, like you said, and rehaul. You know, I like – the challenges, but there's just, I think they went overboard a bit, and they need to bring it back.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, it feels like it just takes away from the game. Mistakes are going to happen, and I understand getting the big plays corrected, but something like that, like, I don't know, it just seems to me like we're taking the game out of the officials' hands, and I know there's a lot of people out there who will scream that it should be, the officials suck, but we allow players to make mistakes and correct themselves. We should be doing the same with officials. This just seems, I don't know, I know it helped our team, and when it helps your team, you're like, yeah, I'll take it. When it goes against you, if this would have gone against the Ticats, like, if it would have been the reverse, people would have been screaming bloody murder that it was away from the play, it doesn't make a difference. So, I don't know, I think something like this just needs to be, like, illegal contact's a penalty. If they spot it, they spot it. You can keep pass interference as a challengeable play because I've seen some pass interference calls. There was one on Brandon Banks, I think it was last year in BC, that was very clearly pass interference, and they missed it. And, of course, the big one is the one in the Grey Cup that the referee didn't throw a flag on. That was clearly pass interference that led to Edmonton scoring the game-winning touchdown. Those things, those are major mistakes. This one on Banks here was so minute. I just feel like all it did was slow the game down and took away a big play from Saskatchewan. Again, it didn't really play much in the outcome. Ticats still were up 10-0 at the time. Saskatchewan would have had the ball deep. With the way the Riders were playing, they might not have been it. Like, I know it probably doesn't play much of a role, but it's still one of those things that I don't want to see. It slows the game down. It bores the fans in the stadium. And I don't want it. Like, get rid of it. Get rid of it.
Yeah, and it's just, especially if it's like that, it's like not even, you're so far away from the actual play that it's just, coaches are just throwing the challenge flag in desperation and saying, oh, there was illegal contact on this guy or whatever. It's just, it's getting way out of hand, and it should be pulled back in the offseason. They need to talk this over and fix this, because what if this happens in the playoffs or in the Grey Cup game where there's a penalty way away from the actual play and it changes the outcome of the game? It needs to be revisited and changed in the offseason.
For sure, for sure. So, Chad Owens' jersey watch time, Mike. He didn't have a huge game against Saskatchewan. 4 catches for 58 yards, but he did score 2 touchdowns. So, his touchdown totals doubled after that game. On the season, he's now got 39 catches for 529 yards and 4 TDs, which projects to 88 catches for 1,190 yards and 9 touchdowns. I say this week in, week out, I've come to terms with the fact that there is a really, really good chance that not only will Chad Owens continue to be a Hamilton Tiger Cat, but that I will be wearing his jersey next season. I've come to accept it. But again, like I said about John Chick, if I'm going to be wrong about a guy, I'd rather be wrong about a guy who comes in and balls out. And Chad Owens has been very, very good for this team. And he's sort of quickly become a fan favorite with Ticat fans. It seems like all those years in Double Blue have kind of worn off rather quickly.
Well, with all the big catches and the big plays he's made, it's not a surprise. I mean, this guy's been huge for the Ticats this season. He's been, game after game, he puts up numbers. And if he's not putting up huge yardage, he's scoring. He's scoring touchdowns. So, yeah, he's been awesome this year. And I think he'll be re-signed in the offseason.
I think so, too. I'd be very surprised if he's, unless he goes back to Toronto, which I don't see, I'd be very surprised if he's not a Hamilton Tiger Cat next year. So Ticats news this week, there's none. The Ticats have done nothing since the last time we recorded. No player signings, no players released, no anything. They just got back to practice today for the first time since their win over Saskatchewan. So we can skip that and go right on to the CFL news, because there is a big piece of news that came out this past week. And that is our good buddy Hank Burris is no longer the starter in Ottawa. Trevor Harris will start for the Red Blacks this week against the BC Lions. You surprised at all?
I'm a bit surprised. You know, I think Greg Campbell said that Burris is our starter even when Harris is healthy and all this, but I guess they've looked at the past two games from Burris, and then they evaluated what Trevor Harris did in his games that he started this season and said, well, Harris performed better, and he gives us a better chance to win. So they slide Harris into the starter spot, and we're gonna see how Henry, you know, takes that. So far, he's been professional, I've heard, and that's what Campbell said, and he's taken it well. But you gotta know, beneath the surface, he's red hot about it. You know, he thinks that he should be the starter, and he's just not anymore. Harris took his job, and he's gonna have to sit on the bench for a while.
The things that Campbell said, and I'm not surprised at what he said. Is he going to really come out and say, when I told Henry Burris that he was now our number two quarterback and that Harris was going to start, he called me a f-hole and spit my face? Like, yeah. Obviously what was going to happen is Burris was going to take this. Like, he's not going to complain to the coach. Like, even if he did, the coach is not going to come out and say that publicly. And have you seen this sort of, like, spin that Ottawa fans have put on this, where they're talking about this will be fine if Burris keeps his ego in check? And I see this, and I think the one thing Henry Burris is obviously known for is keeping his ego in check.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. If he could check his ego, he never would have fled Saskatchewan when he was a free agent and they told him, yeah, we'll bring you back, but you've got to be in a quarterback battle with Nealon Green. I mean, it was Nealon Green. You could have beat Nealon Green in a quarterback competition. He never would have been run out of Calgary when he was benched for Drew Tate. He would have stayed there and been the good soldier, but he said, I don't want to stay here. I deserve to be a starting quarterback in this league. And he has since proven for most of those years that he was right. He still has a lot to offer. And he would have been sent packing from Hamilton if he could have accepted his role here. He did not like the Mazzoli and Lefevre packages that Austin brought in 2013. He thought he should have been the highest paid quarterback in the league. Ticats didn't see it that way. They get rid of him. So if Burris could check his ego, who knows where he would be in his career. But he's left three teams or been run out of three teams because he can't. So why would anyone expect him to be able to do it now?
Especially after he was MOP last year. I mean, that's going to boost his ego even more. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for him being the backup in Ottawa, because I don't really see Harris underperforming. I don't see him not playing the way that he did earlier in the season. I think he's going to take off again. So I think Hank's going to be looking from the bench for the rest of the season, and he's going to have a tough time with that.
I think barring injury, I think we've seen the last of Henry Burris as a starting quarterback in the CFL period.
Yeah, because where's
he going to go? Exactly, where's he going to go now?
Because, you know, I don't see any openings on any team. So maybe back to Saskatchewan, but that's highly doubtful. I don't think they'd take Burris over Durant. So, yeah, I don't see him going anywhere unless there's a new expansion team coming into the league, and we know that's not going to happen. So, yeah, we might have seen the last of Hank as a starting quarterback.
Yeah, it's I think it's very likely, honestly. And here's the thing about this move, and this should tell you all you need to know about how I feel about it, is when I heard about this and I talked about this with people, I told them, I'm kind of bummed by this. I wish they would have kept Burris as a starter, because that bodes better for the Tiger Cats.
Yeah.
Trevor Harris has been phenomenal when he played this season. He was really good for most of last year. The one team he had difficulty against, of course, was the Hamilton Tiger Cats. But he's got a much better supporting cast in Ottawa. This makes Ottawa more dangerous with Harris as their quarterback than it does with Burris. And as a Ticats fan, I wanted Burris to stay the starter, because it would have meant the Ticats had a better shot of beating him.
Yeah, it makes things more tight in the East Division, and I think the Eastern Division is going to get, you know, better in the second half of the season with Ray coming back, Toronto, Montreal maybe turning it around on offense. So there's going to be four solid teams in the East Division, you know, fighting for playoff spots.
There's really only one team in this league that is out of it, and that's the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Every other team is in the conversation as a playoff contender and a possible Grey Cup participant. So you never know. And to be heading into Labor Day with 8 of the 9 teams still very much alive, that's a very good thing for this league.
Yeah, it shows a lot of parity. I mean, Edmonton's turning it around, two wins in a row for them. Winnipeg seems to be doing turning it around with the Nichols at quarterback. Calgary, BC's a good team. And the East Division is stepping it up. So it's going to be a very interesting second half of the season, I think.
I completely agree. We're entering the second half of the season, and we still have no decision on the Daron Carter suspension. This is becoming a complete farce. This incident happened on June 30th. And had the original discipline, the suspension, was announced on July 4th. It has been 55 days since the incident and 51 days since the punishment was announced. I understand the wheels of justice move slowly, but this is beyond ridiculous. Nearly 8 weeks to get this sorted out, and we still haven't heard of a final decision? Like, come on, are you kidding me? This is nuts.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, they brought in an arbitrator. He couldn't make a decision yet anyways. So I think that the suspension will be coming up this week unless it gets completely thrown out. So, yeah, it's been going on for way too long. But we see this in other sports where the arbitrator gets involved and it gets delayed and gets delayed. So it's not really out of the realm of professional sports. But yeah, I agree. It's been going on way too long. There should be a decision coming soon.
They postponed the decision last week because of how late in the week it was going to come down. They didn't want to interrupt his, like, the practice. Like, they were near the game against Ottawa last week, so they're like, we'll hold it off. We're now on, as we record this, Wednesday, with Montreal ready to play on Friday, and we still haven't heard word. So are they going to push this off another week? Like, we're going to get next weekend, like, the next weekend of game, like, we're heading into Labor Day. That's coming up. We're going to be at the halfway point of the season. This thing nearly started, like, it was week two. And yeah, we still have nothing. This is, I know that appeals and suspension appeals and that can move slowly and it does in other leagues, but for this to take almost 2 months is completely asinine. This should have been handled a long time ago. Like, this is crazy.
It's going to really hurt Montreal if he does get suspended, because we're getting to the more important part of the season, and if they don't have Carter in a game and they lose that game, it's going to sting really bad. So they're starting to turn it around maybe in Montreal, and then to lose him at this stage of the season for a game is
going to
hurt.
I personally don't think he's going to be suspended. I think they will. I think they'll rescind the suspension, they'll stick to the fine, and that'll be it. And I don't know if that's the reason why they're taking so long in announcing this, but I don't see this as being a suspendable offense. To get suspended in football, especially in the CFL, is really, really hard. And for an incident like this, I didn't think at the time that it was suspension worthy, and I still don't know.
Okay, that's interesting. It's close. If it's not a suspension, it's that's bumping a head coach. I know he was on the field, but it seems a little out there. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got suspended. But if it takes this long, maybe there is no suspension coming.
Well, here's the thing: as everyone said, if you let this happen, it's going to happen all the time. We haven't seen it since.
No. And the thing is, like, I remember when this happened, some guys on the TSN panel were like, oh, this is the problem in the East with the, two sidelines on the same side of the field. We haven't seen an incident that I recall ever happening with because the two teams on the same sideline. So, and it hasn't happened since. So I don't see that being a huge problem. I'd like for both, to separate the teams, to be on the opposite sides of the field, that would be great. But I think it's because of the branding, the logos, what I'm talking about, the advertising on the one side of the field. I think that's the reason why they're on the same side. So I don't see it being a problem going forward, and it has never been a problem in the past except for that one incident.
So the last piece of CFL news that we want to touch on here, Ricky Ray has announced will return to the Argos as a starting quarterback following their bye week, which means barring injury in his first game back against BC next Wednesday, it's going to be Ray versus Caleros at the Labor Day Classic. I love it. I couldn't ask for anything more. That's the matchup I want to see. Those are the two quarterbacks I want to see go after each other. So what do you think about Ray's return? Do you think this boosts the Argos, or do you think maybe he's a little bit past his prime? Because he didn't look all that great early on in the season.
Well, maybe he's past his prime, but he's a hell of a lot better than Kilgore. I mean, last week was just brutal, and the week before he threw five interceptions. So to get anybody in there but him is a good thing for the Argos. I think with Ray, it's just so important to give him time. If you don't give him time, I've said it before, if you don't give him time, he's not going to be effective. But if you do, he's going to pick apart defenses. So yes, he might be past his prime, but I think he can still be a really effective quarterback. And it's a really good thing for the Argos. And like you said, I want to see the best Argos team possible. in the Labor Day game. I don't want to see, you know, Kilgore or the backup quarterbacks playing for the Argos. I want to see the star quarterback playing behind center for the Argos. Get the best competition out there for the Ticats. Make it the best game you can, and it's going to be a good Labor Day game, I think.
I think so, too. I think the Argos are a team that is not to be underestimated. But Logan Kilgore, everyone thought, oh, Zach Caleros, Trevor Harris, Logan Kilgore, not so much.
No. He was really bad. Like I said, 5 interceptions in the one game, and then I think it was 7 of 14 for like 40-some yards in his playing time last week. So, yes, Milanovic and that crew has turned out a lot of great quarterbacks, but it doesn't look like they have a gem here.
No, it definitely doesn't. Are you ready for Bozo of the Week time, Mike?
Yes. I had a tough time coming up with one, and you suggested an interesting pick, and I agree. It goes to Josh Smith this week.
Thank you very much.
You had the pick in the Pick'em group. You picked, well, on this show, you picked the Alouettes in the upset victory against the Red Blacks, and we all know how that game went. A big dominating win for the Alouettes. But what happened, Josh?
So I'm sitting there watching the game as Montreal is cruising to victory over the Red Blacks. Like that game was over very early. And I'm kind of sitting there going, oh, yeah, I nailed the upset pick. And then it dawns on me, I did not put my picks on and pick them. So I log on, realize, nope, didn't make the pick. So while I still had a good week, I went 2-1 the remainder of the week. Would have been a lot better if I had not been a complete idiot and picked Montreal. Would have had a 3-1 week. Montreal was such a huge underdog, it would have given me massive points and jumped over a bunch of people. So because of that, I nominated myself for Bozo of the Week, and Mike, you were gracious enough to accept. If there's ever been a Bozo move by one of us on this show, that is the Bozo move. You pick the upset and then you forget to put the pick in? Or like, what the hell? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah,
that's tough. But I'm sure one of these weeks I'll beat Bozo of the Week, so I'll return the favor and get in there. It just has to happen. So, but yeah, this week Bozo of the Week goes to Josh for not actually putting in the pick, which would have been, I'm sure the percentages on the pick'em were you know, high, you know, probably around 80-something% for Ottawa. So yeah, you had a good pick last week, but you just didn't file it in.
Yeah, it's I on 3 Down Nation, I was the only guy on we do picks for the website every week. I was the only one out of the 7 of us that picked to pick Montreal. Like I was peacocking when that game was going on, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, I'm a moron. Because it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I don't remember putting my picks in. And then I looked and I didn't. And I was like, as soon as it happened, I was like, if Mike can't come up with a guy, or even if Mike does come up with a guy, I'm going to nominate myself and see if he'll pick me. And I graciously accept my Bozo of the Week award, much deserved on my part.
Yes, and glad to give it up.
Thank you very much. I hope this is the only one I get, though. I don't want to be getting too many of
these. Should be the only one.
Okay, you ready to preview this game? We've talked a lot about it already, but man, this is a big one. The Calgary Stampeders, this is a big game. Hamilton goes into Calgary and they're going to take on this hot Calgary team that has not lost since week 1. They have the tie in there, but their only loss of the season occurred back in week 1 in BC. And Hamilton in Calgary has been not good. They have not won there since 2004. And in the last few years, we have seen some close, heartbreaking losses. In 2009, you'll remember, they lost 15-14 when they kept Calgary out of the end zone, and it was 5 Sandro DeAngelis field goals that sunk them. They had a chance at the end of the game to get close to kick a game-winning field goal, and Quinton Porter gets sacked in the second-to-last play. They don't get enough on the third down play. They lose the game. Then we have 2012. This might be the most famous of all the games, where they get down deep. It was a snow game late in the year. They get down deep. They have a chance to kick the game-winning field goal, and the snap was botched, and it goes low, and they miss it. They lose that game 34-32. In 2013, the following year, they lose 26-22. They were up 22-19, driving, and Henry Burst throws an interception in the end zone. Calgary goes down and wins that game. 2014, they lost 10-7. The offense couldn't get going. This was the first game after Zach Caleros got hurt against Edmonton that year. Jeremiah Mazzoli started. Did not look great. They lose that one. And then just last year, first game of the year, they kept it close, but at the end, the defense gave up too many big plays. Rene Paradis kicks a last-second field goal, and they lose that one 25-24. So even though Hamilton hasn't won in Calgary since 2004, they've been in enough games. I really, really hope this is the week that the Ticats finally get that elusive win in Calgary. But this is not going to be easy. This is a big game. I'm really excited for this. I look at this game, and I think if the Ticats can win this one, the rest of the CFL, like we talked about with the remaining schedule, I think the rest of the CFL is in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah. They'll take notice if the Ticats win against Calgary in Calgary. I mean, 2004 is a long time ago. And, but like you said about the past games in the recent years, we've been close. They've been close to winning games in Calgary. So maybe this is the game they get over the hump and finally get a win in Calgary.
I sure hope so. So I'm going to tackle the offense this time. And it's simple. They just need to do what they did against Saskatchewan, right? Like just do that. And they'll win 53-7, correct?
Yeah. Well, that'd be nice.
But seriously here, I think the key to this is not turning the ball over. Hamilton so far this year, they are 4-0 when they win the turnover battle. And they're 0-4 when they lose it. So simply put, do not turn the ball over. Get a couple turnovers yourself. And Hamilton should be able to win this football game.
Yeah, and for the defense, create turnovers. If they take away the ball a couple times, they should be good. They need to take away Messam. I think that he's one of the best running backs in the league, and if he gets on a roll, he's hard to bring down. So take Messam out of the game. Make Levi Mitchell throw the ball. I know that he put together one of his best games last week, and maybe he's right gonna really turn it up the rest of the season. But if you can get pressure on him, make him throw an interception or two and slow down Messam, I think they have a good chance at winning this game.
Yeah, a couple more points for the offense that I want to get in here. And they have to do with the receivers. I want to see them continue to spread the ball around. Like we talked about in the game against Saskatchewan, 7 players caught passes against the Riders. So if they can keep that number around that, I think that'll be good. And I want to see them continue to attack the field deep. We talked about this a little bit before, too. This is what was missing from this offense when Caleros was out. They were more focused on those short, high-percentage throws and getting the ball out quick because that's what favored Mazzoli's game. But with Caleros, who I believe is the best deep ball passer in the league, we've seen them attack defenses deep way more often. And the one guy, again, if you listen to the game review from last week and then this preview here, kind of touching on a lot of the same points. I think the guy that's been the biggest beneficiary of the team going deep has been Terrence Tolliver, and I think that's a guy because he doesn't get the attention that a Chad Owens or Luke Tasker or an Andy Fantuz gets. He can have these bigger games. He's got 200-yard games in the last 3 weeks. He led the team in receiving last week. I think he had like 130-something yards. I could see him having another big game this week. He plays the short side wide receiver position. He's going up against a good DB, but he's made plays, and I think he's a guy that we should be looking out for in this game. I think Terrence Tolliver could have another big game.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. He's been awesome the last couple of weeks. He seems to, Underwood played meh when he was in there. Tolliver comes in, he's just on another level. He's a really tall guy. I think he's 6'6". Is that correct?
6'5", 6'6". He is definitely that. He's up there. He's very tall. So, very tall man.
Yeah, and he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he has some speed to him, and he can go up there and get the ball. He's a good red zone receiver. He can make those deep catches for big yards. So, yeah, I'm hoping he has another big game and a big rest of the season.
Do you think the Ticats defensive line can have some – getting back to your defensive points, turnovers are a big thing, but I think we need – for that to happen, I think we need to see pressure from the defensive front. Do you think that they can get pressure? Because Calgary's offensive line has been freaking amazing so far this year.
It's going to be tough. I think that they can if they actually do a different story. They might have to send a little bit more blitzes to get that pressure because of the talent of the offensive line in Calgary. But yeah, if they can get pressure with just the front four, I mean, that's going to be huge for the team. It'll help out the whole defense, help out the secondary, which is probably our weakest area on this team. So yeah, a big part of this game is if they can get pressure with just the front four.
Yeah, I think both offenses match up well. I think that's a wash if you're breaking it down. Hamilton's offense versus Calgary's offense, I think you have two teams that are very similar offensively, so I think that you kind of take those out. Now you got to look at the defense. If Hamilton cannot get pressure and they allow Bo Levi Mitchell to sit back there and go untouched, just like what happened against BC and pretty much what's been happening all season, he's going to pick them apart. And even if you can have the world's best defense, but if a quarterback has all the time in the world and doesn't feel pressured at all, you're going to get beat. So I think that is going to be the key to this game, is making his life a living hell. It's going to be fun to watch and see if they can do that, because this is going to be a good matchup between a really good offensive line and a very, very good defensive front seven.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be great. I think it's going to be a great game, probably game of the week, even though there's a couple potential good games in there, Ottawa, BC being one of them. But it could be, you know, the best game of the week this week.
All right. So you touched on it. Let's get to our picks. Let's move on to there. Always join our Pick'em group, the Oski Wee Wees. You can find the link on 3Down Nation when I post this. It's up there. You can click on it. You can come over and join our group. You win, you're going to win a nice Ticats prize pack, courtesy of myself. No changes this week at the top of the standings. Your girlfriend is still sitting comfortably in third place with 3,273 points. Cappy D is still sitting in second place with 3,726 points. And despite my bonehead maneuver and my Bozo of the Week award, I still sit in first place, but instead of having a 300-point lead, potentially, I'm only at 3,800 total points, so I am very much catchable, but still sit in first place. Mike, you dropped one spot this week to 12th with 2,731 points, but hey, maybe I'll forget to put my picks in again, and I'll be caught. Who knows?
Hopefully.
So we got four games this week, as always. Let's start off where we start off, which is Thursday night in our nation's capital. The BC Lions, coming off a beatdown at the hands of the Calgary Stampeders, head to Ottawa to take on the Red Blacks with their new starting quarterback, Trevor Harris, themselves also coming off a beatdown at the hands of the Montreal Alouettes. You said this could be one of the games of the week. I completely agree with you. I think these are two evenly matched teams. Mike, who do you have in this one?
I got the Renegades.
The Renegades. Okay, well, you're picking the Renegades, so that's a loss for you.
Yeah. I got the Red Blacks. I think that, Trevor Harris coming back brings this team up to another level. Jennings had a tough week last week. I think he'll have a bounce back game, but I don't think it'll be enough. I'll take Ottawa at home.
So I've been wrong on most of my Ottawa picks this year. So you taking Ottawa is a good thing, because I'm going to take the BC Lions. It's a gut feeling. I think Harris might be a little bit rusty after missing a month. I think that this is similar to how Zach Caleros came back. He started off a little bit rougher than he should have, and then things got going, but by then it was a little too late, even though they did make the comeback that ultimately fell short. I think BC, after getting blown out by Calgary, is going to reassess themselves. I think they're going to come back stronger. I like the Lions in what I think is a very, very, very close game on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I can see it going either way, so yeah, I can see BC winning as well.
All right, Friday night, we see a doubleheader, and part one of that doubleheader goes in Montreal as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, fresh off their bye but on a 3-game winning streak, heads to Montreal, who come into this game brimming with confidence after destroying the Ottawa Red Blacks a week ago. Mike, who do you have in this one?
I got the Alouettes. I think they might be turning the corner there. Yeah, it's tough to say with Glenn. I think he's a good quarterback, but he's just a little bit up and down from week to week. So, but I think that, you know, they got Sutton coming back, I believe, and Kenny Stafford's going to be in the lineup. So they get some offensive weapons back, even though I think Rutley did a pretty good job. I think Sutton's another level, another step up at running back. So I'm going to take the Alouettes. And maybe, I don't know if you consider an upset, but yeah, I picked the Alouettes at home.
This was one of the toughest games for me to pick this week, because you look at it and go, Winnipeg's on a 3-game winning streak, but they're Winnipeg. I don't have confidence in them because they're Winnipeg. And then you look at Montreal and go, man, that was impressive how they went into Ottawa and laid a beat down there. And Kevin Glenn had a wicked game. But Kevin Glenn usually follows up those amazing performances with stinkers. So I had to just pretty much flip a coin here, and I flipped one in my head, and I've decided to go with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to win this game. And my tiebreaker was, they're coming off a bye, so they're rested. They're getting some players back healthy. Johnny Adams looks to be making his first start of the season, an all-world defensive back that was maybe Winnipeg's best player last year. Getting him back in the secondary is going to help that secondary a lot. And maybe I just believe in Winnipeg. If you look at this team, the next few weeks, they have this game at Montreal, then they got the doubleheader against Saskatchewan. There's a legitimate chance this team could be 7-4 right after Labor Day. And then they're all of a sudden making you look like a genius.
Yeah, exactly. And make the Western Division, I mean, very interesting. With Edmonton, Calgary, and BC all being really good teams, it's Winnipeg being 7-4 right at the top of the standings would be very, very interesting.
So Friday night's second half of the doubleheader is the game you will be attending. Hopefully you'll be attending with some class, but it'll have to be seen. Saskatchewan Roughriders, Edmonton Eskimos, Commonwealth Stadium. Mike, do I even have to ask who you have in this game?
No, not really. I obviously have the Eskimos. I don't think that Saskatchewan has a chance in this game. They're just so it's a bit of a show over there in Saskatchewan with all the changes. I think they had something like, I don't know, 9 or 10 changes on the roster last week. So with all the turnover and just being a bad team overall, you got to go with the Eskimos, especially since the Eskimos have been on fire lately. You know, they go into Toronto, put a whooping on the Argos. Back to 500, so for the 4-4 record, you can't pick the Riders. You got to go with the Eskimos.
At some point, Saskatchewan is going to get that second win of the season. I can't see this team going 1-17, but not this week. Not in Edmonton, not against the Eskimos. This one, I think, is over by halftime. Probably the only game of the week I think that will be a blowout. The Eskimos, yeah, I'm going with the Es. No way am I taking the Riders in this one. The week ends on a Sunday night. We got some Sunday night football, CFL style. Maybe the game of the week, Mike. Hamilton Tiger Cats at Calgary Stampeders. Who do you got in this one?
It is a tough decision, but I went with the Tie Cats, as I have every week. I just think that they'll find a way to win. Claris is back there, obviously, and this team looks to be on the upswing. I think they're going to have a very strong second half, and this is the real test. This is where it starts. They're going to get a big win, first win in Calgary since 2004. I got to go with the Tie Cats.
So, full disclosure, when I initially did these picks, I had the Calgary Stampeders. They're just so powerful right now, and I think what we saw last week wasn't an aberration by the Tie Cats, but it was against Saskatchewan. So as much as I said earlier, you can't take anything away from them. It still was against Saskatchewan. So I was going to take Calgary, and then as you were talking, you didn't convince me that the Tie Cats were going to win, but I just had a change of heart. And I, too, am going to go with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in this one. I think they make believers out of the rest of the league that this team with Zach Collaros at the helm is the team to beat in the East Division, regardless of their record at the time. I might be kicking myself Sunday night if Calgary finds a way to win this one by like two, but I couldn't. I've already gone against the Tie Cats once this year, and I was right. I didn't want to do it a second time. I'm going with the Tie Cats. I'm taking Hamilton to win this game and to make believers, like I said, make believers out of everyone in this league. The Tie Cats are for real, and they're the team that you're going to have to worry about in the second half of this season.
Yeah, it's definitely a statement game. Hamilton going up against the number one team in the West right now, and if they put up a W, it's going to be a big statement.
For sure. And that losing streak in Calgary has to end at some point, right?
You'd think so.
Well, hopefully it is this week. So, question time, Mike. We got a fair amount this week. We had a holdover from last week that decided that we would keep. Do you remember when we were talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this comes from Adam, who constantly provides us with questions, and we very much appreciate that. Thank you very much. He wants us to rank the Tie Cats' areas of concern from least to greatest between the special teams coverage unit, the offensive line, and the secondary. Adam provided us with his ranking on the most recent comment section of our podcast. He has it that the offensive line is his least area of concern, the secondary is number two, and the area of concern that he has the most for is the special teams coverage unit. So, Mike, out of those three, which one do you rank third as your least concerning area?
I got to go with special teams coverage units. You know, they have been great this year, obviously, but I think they will improve. So that's my number three. My number two is the offensive line, just because, you know, it's just so important to keep Zach upright, not to, you can't get hit a lot back there. We want to keep him healthy. So that's my number two. Number one is the secondary. They've been my number one concern all season, and they continue to be even after a pretty darn good performance. I mean, five interceptions is pretty exceptional, but yeah, they're still my number one concern because there's still some tinkering that needs to be done to fix that up for the second half of the season.
So my number three is the offensive line, and I'm going to steal Adam's answer here. He basically said that he's not as concerned about the O-line simply because when Mike Filer comes back, this unit's probably going to be a lot better, and I tend to agree. I think when we get Mike Filer back, this unit will solidify itself. Jake Olsen's also he thinks he's going to be ready to come back by around Labor Day. We're going to see about that. But I think that would provide another, could maybe replace Brian Simmons at tackle. And I think they get better there a little bit. So I'm not really that concerned about the offensive line. They've got some injuries. And I think when those guys get healthy, the line will be a lot better. And it hasn't been terrible this year. They've had bad games, but they haven't been a complete train wreck for most of the season. I just think that Mike Filer coming back, I think, is going to be a big boost for them. Second, I had the special teams coverage units. I think that the reason they're performing so poorly is there was a lot of special teams guys that this team lost. Taylor Reed was good on special teams. Arnold Gascon-Nadon was good on special teams. Brandon Stewart was good on special teams. Ed Gainey was good on special teams. Like, that's a lot of veteran special teams players to lose. They're working some guys in. I think as the season progresses, they still have Mike Daly. They still have Frederick Plessis. Those are two of the best in the league at special teams coverage. I think the unit will get better. They also don't see a ton of great returners the rest of the year. Roy Finch in Calgary is a guy they're going to see twice who looks like he's on the verge of breaking one, but they no longer have to see Chris Rainey, and they don't play against Brandon Banks. So I'm not as concerned. Number one, just like you, the secondary. You said basically everything I could possibly say about it, so there's really no point in me parroting your comments, but what Mike said is exactly what I agree with. They've been a concern all year, and they continue to be as they keep tinkering. So we got a pair of questions next about Henry Burris. I think some of our listeners want to get me in trouble because I have made no bones about the fact that I'm not the biggest Henry Burris fan. I have taken quite a bit of heat from people in Ottawa for my takes on Henry Burris, but I'm going to put these two questions together. One comes from my friend Richard. He asked this of me at the game. He said, should Henry Burris have been fined under conduct detrimental to the league for his shove it rant? And Joe, our buddy USFL Tecmo, who gave you your punishment idea, he wants to know what the over under is on the inevitable smiling Hank blow up now that he's a backup. So Mike, should Burris have been fined? And when do you think Hank's going to blow up now that he's no longer starting for the Red Blacks?
Yeah, I think Hank, you know, TSN is the official broadcaster of the CFL. We all know this. They pay a lot of money to the league to play their games on their network. They've been a big part of the league for a long time. So for Hank to, you know, say those things about TSN and the panel and all that, I think it's a finable offense. I'm not, you know, up in arms that he didn't get fined, but I think it could have happened.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know if he should have been fined, but either way, if he would have been fined, I would have understood. And he's not. I kind of get that too. It's as much as I dislike Henry Burris, I don't know if that necessarily was fine worthy. Although I can understand where someone could make the decision that it was, and very much he deserved to be fined, but him not being fined doesn't surprise me at all. So over under, Mike, when do you think Henry Burris flips out?
Yeah, I'm gonna go around week 14. That's where I'll put that over under.
Okay, so you're saying week 14. I'm gonna surprise some people. I'm gonna say it doesn't happen.
Okay.
I'm gonna say when it does happen though, like it's not gonna happen during the season. When it happens is when the Ottawa Redblacks release him following the season. Because okay. I think that's where it's happening. I think what'll happen is they're all in on Trevor Harris right now. Trevor Harris is making starter money next year. Henry Burris is apparently making backup money. But I think that they'll realize you can't have a guy like Burris as a backup. I think they will release him. And then a little bit after that is when he will come out and do what he's done after he left Saskatchewan, after he left Calgary, after he left Hamilton. And he will find a way to rip into the Ottawa team. And their fans will go, man, we should have seen this coming. All these people kept telling us this guy was a jerk. And now he is a jerk. And they'll hate him just like every other team fan base that has had him as their quarterback hates him now. So not during the season, I think. Because if you look at when he was benched in Calgary, I'll use that as I use history as a predictor of future events. He didn't complain during the year, as far as I remember, when he was benched for Drew Tate. So I think he'll be a good soldier. He'll stay the backup. He won't say anything publicly. But then once the Red Blacks decide to move on and let him go, that's when he is going to explode.
Yeah. I have to. That's a good point. You know, you got to wonder if he's hurt his post-football career, because, you know, a lot of people predicted he might be with TSN as a commentator after his career, and maybe he's hurt himself with those comments they made, but I'm not sure. But you're right. I think that it could happen after the season, after he gets released. Yeah, that's a good point.
So Andrew, at Hammy A-hole on Twitter, asks us, do you forecast any changes to the Ticats lineup this week? So we saw a few changes last week heading into the Saskatchewan game. Mike, do you think the team will make many, if any, changes going to this game against Calgary?
I don't think so. I think they're gonna keep Sermons and Davis on the corners or in the secondary wherever they were. I don't see them tinkering that much. I think they're gonna stick with it for at least another week, see how they perform again, and maybe if one or two, both of them don't perform well, maybe we'll see a little bit more shuffling going on in the secondary. But other than that, I don't think it's gonna be changed at all.
Yeah, other than a major player like a Johnny Sears or a guy like Jake Olsen being cleared to return to the game, I don't see this team making any changes to their lineup whatsoever. I'd be shocked if we saw the depth chart for Sunday's game and saw the team make any changes, period, barring injury, of course.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to be the same lineup that it was last week.
So our last question comes from Alex, Real Alex D on Twitter. He is one of the four co-hosts of the Piffles podcast, the Saskatchewan Roughriders podcast that I don't know if you've been listening to it, but I listen to it every week. Great stuff. They have a rant segment on there that I just absolutely love. But, you know, Riders fans, so he wanted to ask us a question. And he says, even though Hamilton played well, they also played the Riders. What do the Ticats need to work on to challenge for first? Mike, what do you think?
I think the offense is running pretty smoothly. We talked about it many times. I just think the secondary needs to be better. If they can really cover some of the top receivers and shut them down or slow them down, I think that this team is one of the best, if not the best, in the league. So I think they can, if they improve in the secondary, then it's going to be all good.
I agree. I don't even think they need to improve to be the league's best secondary. They just have to get to the league average. They get to middle of the pack with the talent they have on this team, both on the offensive side and on the rest of the defense and on the special teams. I think this team will be perfectly fine. I think even with no changes, nothing to change with this team, they're going to challenge for and win first in the East Division. I think just having Zach Caleros back makes all the difference in the world. The confidence this team has now, they rolled over Saskatchewan. Like, I just see this team putting it together, and I think we're in for a huge second half of the season from these guys. They've lost four games so far. I could very easily see this team with their remaining schedule going something like 12-6, and that will be more than enough to get them first place in the East Division.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they'll have one of the best records that they've had in the last 5 years. I think the best record they've had was it 10-8? Is that the best they've done? Or is it 11-7?
No, 10-8 is the best they've done over the last few years. Their best record in franchise history is 12-5-1. So they've never won more than 12 games in a season. And I think they could challenge for that very easily. I know it's going to be tough because they've already lost four and they got this tough game coming up against Calgary. But if you, like I said, you look at that remaining schedule with either games at home, games in Ottawa, games in Toronto. There's one game now after this Calgary game where they go outside of Ontario. That is a recipe for success. They've been great on the road so far this season. They've got one loss so far, two losses on the road. They've won it already in Toronto. And I think going into Ottawa, who knows what that team's going to look like come the end of the year. This team has a chance to go on an Edmonton-like run like the Eskimos did last year where they won, 10 in a row to win the Grey Cup. I could very easily see this Ticats team doing something very, very similar.
Yeah, all the pieces are in place now, so I hope you're right about that.
Yeah, it's time to make the move. No more excuses. It's time to get this team away from these 500 records and to get them into being 10, 11, 12, 13 win teams year in, year out.
Yeah, I'd love to see 12 wins. That would just make me really happy.
We got a couple other questions that I'm going to hold off to until next week. So, Rob and Eric, we did not forget your questions. We just decided we had a few that were a little more time-sensitive than yours. We will get to yours next week, so thank you, everyone, for submitting questions. Mike, that is it. We are done for the week, so don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to have your questions answered, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am @JoshSmith_82. And of course, you can always post your questions in the comment section on 3downnation under where this podcast will be posted. So that was episode 53 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Don't cook it.